Tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, Patty sits down for an exclusive interview with speaker Michael Madigan. We also have Peter Schwarzbach, the owner of Vin Chicago, to talk about an upcoming wine stroll. And Chicago Tribune cartoonist and editorial board member Scott Stantis joins us at midnight. And now, live from the state's capital, here is Patty Vasquez.
Thank you so much for joining us Pretty Late. I am your host, Patty Vasquez, and tonight we are broadcasting from Springfield, Illinois, our state capital. I'm in the basement, as a matter of fact, and for more than 2 years, our state has gone without a budget, and we are, in fact, in a crisis. And for that entire time, actually, going all the way back to April 3rd, 2015, which, by the way, was World Autism Day, we've been very involved. Both WGN Radio and our show has been calling for people to be aware of what is going on, to have conversations with our legislators. We've been coming to Springfield in part to find out what was happening, but also to remind our legislators that we are listening. And I was surprised. I was more than surprised when the opportunity arose for me to sit down in a rare moment to interview Speaker Michael Madigan. I had not actually asked until this year. We've sat down on our show every week. We've had conversations with legislators. We started out with a conversation on Friday nights called the Budget Crisis Corner. We would have one legislator from either side of the aisle, sometimes representatives, some senators. We haven't had the chance to speak with everybody, and I assure you, we are trying to make the rounds, and I want to really represent as many districts as possible in the state of Illinois. And I've wanted to have these conversations so that I could learn more, so I could understand more, but also so that people all over are not just in Illinois, but I think it's important to understand how this process works and to feel like you have a place here, that your voice is being heard, because it's so really easy to become apathetic, to be cynical, to think, well, it's not going to make any difference. Who cares? They're just going to do whatever they want. And in particular, when it comes to Speaker Madigan, there is a mythology that has really been created. And part of that, I believe, is because we haven't heard enough from him. And I'm hoping that the interview that you hear, I know that not everyone's going to get what they want. I think many people have many more questions, things that they want our legislators to answer for. It's a beginning. It is a foot in the door to start the conversation, to listen to each other. Rob, I don't know if you're in the newsroom, if you have
right
a chance.
Here.
I know I heard in your broadcast, when I sat down with the speaker, I had my questions in front of me. And it's an interesting moment to sit down with somebody mm-hmm. who controls the situation in a way that, you know, he has his points. And I was surprised I got to every question. I was like, okay, I did not think I was going to make it to the end of this. There you go.
I think you talked about the mythology and the mystery that surrounds Mike Madigan. He would probably be the first to admit that he himself has created that, because he's not an open guy. He doesn't talk a lot about what he does behind the scenes to try to push Illinois forward. So in that instance, yeah, I think he'd probably own some of that. But I'm looking forward to listening to the rest of the interview.
I was glad, and believe me, I was surprised when they took us up on the invitation to have an interview. We did meet in the speaker's office. It was one of those things. I could not travel with Michael Heidemann, my producer, so we were grateful to the folks at WUIS who provided an engineer. Greg was great, made sure that because you really need to take the technical aspect out of my hands. I wanted to make sure that there weren't any mistakes. But this is the kind of thing I've been talking to legislators for the last couple of years. And really, we do. There is so much out there. There has been all this, work created around the Speaker of the House. He does, I believe he's approaching a record of the longest serving Speaker of the House in the country. And I've been talking to legislators, there is something in the middle. There's something, between what everyone believes, all the, these stories that they've heard. And on the other side, I've talked to legislators who say that they don't see that side of him that is in the press. But the story, I believe, is somewhere in the middle. And hopefully, again, like I said, it's a start in the right direction for hearing that side of it.
Give me an idea of what you felt when you walked into his office, because clearly he is the most powerful man in Illinois. There has to be not that you were intimidated, but some nervous energy.
I talked to him about the Beverly Arts Center, as a matter of fact. He mentioned my career as a comic. He had he actually had a printed copy of my biography, my resume from the internet. And I said, yes, actually, as a matter of fact, I've performed several times at the Beverly Arts Center, which is a fantastic venue, one of the best. And I said that I was surprised to recently find out that I am, in fact, not North Side Irish, that my dad was born on the South Side. He was surprised to find out that I was Irish and said that I did not look Irish. So that was really how our conversation started, was he already knew something about me and started out with that as his lead. But yeah, he said, and I said, that's all right. People who don't think I look Mexican either. So I am I'm a person without an ethnicity. But that was really how our conversation started. He offered me a glass of water. We sat down at his at the long conference table that he has in his office. And we were off and running.
Now, if that conference table could talk, that would be a story.
There are a lot of papers, a lot of research being done, a lot of notes that he has, and he actually had handed me a document from the Institute for Illinois Fiscal Sustainability. So we talked a little bit, I think, a little in the conversation that we have, but it's something that, you know, they are trying. I've talked to some people today, by the way, Rob, and as far as the grand bargain goes, the grand compromise, and it sounds like there will be some movement tomorrow. So hopefully, we'll have some news.
Look, I know you're going to get to the interview, and I'm certainly going to be listening to it. That's for sure. We've been teasing it all night long. And again, congratulations on getting the interview. But let me just ask you this.
Sure.
Is he, because we have this notion that people in his position are living in a bubble, whether you're in Springfield or D.C. or wherever the case may be, is he acutely aware of what's going on in this state? I mean, does he understand the gravity of the current situation?
I think that he has a laser focus on what needs to be accomplished. And I had asked him at one point, you'll hear it as far as, like, you know, the people that are suffering the most. And I think that's something that I would like more to, you know, addressed more directly is I understand the desire. It's a political battle of the wills. Of where these two men are coming from, Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan. And I do think that there are casualties, and I wish that there was a way for us to really address that in a better way, because people deserve better.
Well, once again, congratulations.
Well, thank you. So we will hear that interview when we come back in just a moment. Thank you, Rob. More after this on 720 WGN.
You're listening Pretty Late, and this is a moment in Pretty Late history. Thank you so much, Speaker Madigan, for taking the time to join us today.
You're welcome.
I know you've got a busy schedule. There's a lot that's been said about you. You've been in office long enough for so many things to be written. But last week, former Governor Edgar, a Republican, a respected Republican, said that you are not the villain that the media makes you out to be, and that even with a weak governor or an incompetent governor, the governor still has more power than the speaker. What did you think when the governor said that?
Governor Edgar and I had a good relationship when he was the governor and I was the speaker, and we've maintained a good relationship since we see each other from time to time. We were together at a memorial in the Capitol building a few weeks ago for a man named Steve Schnorf. We sat right next to each other, exchanged some ideas and views on the current budget impasse, and I would say it was fair to say that he and I are pretty much in agreement on the problem and how we could solve the problem. So I've thoroughly enjoyed my relationship with Governor Edgar, as I did with Governor Thompson and Governor Ryan. You see, I've served under eight governors, and of the eight, five were Republicans. The last seven, four were Republicans. And during the last seven, why, we always had a budget. So I would have differences with Governors Thompson and Edgar and Ryan, political differences, and there would be disagreements in the legislature, and there would be statements issued. But at the end of the day, we would bury our differences and come to an agreement on a budget. Now, that hasn't happened for the last 2 years. And I think it's fair to ask, well, what's changed? What's different between now and those prior seven governors? And obviously, it's the current governor, Mr. Rauner, who in my judgment is attempting to enact an extreme right agenda for Illinois, and I don't support that.
When you say extreme right, what do you think people think of when they hear extreme right?
Well, I know what I think of. I think, number one, he wants to take Illinois right to work, as happened in Indiana, in Michigan, in Wisconsin. After that, he wants to reduce the benefit level in workers' compensation. He wants to completely or partially repeal collective bargaining at the local level. He wants to repeal or change the prevailing wage, which is used in the construction industry to set wage levels. So if you look at all three of those areas, reduction in benefit and workers' compensation, repeal of collective bargaining, repeal of the prevailing wage, what you're really doing is lowering the wages of the middle class, lowering the standard of living of the middle class, and driving injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room. That's his agenda, and I don't support that agenda.
There have been governors in the past, Republican governors, who might have had a right, extreme right agenda, but you found ways to work with them. Is part of what goes into Governor Rauner's experience in having no political experience, no executive experience, do you think that has a role to play here?
Well, let's go back to those prior Republican governors, Thompson, Edgar, Ryan. They were all card-carrying Republicans. They were Republicans in good standing, but they were not extreme right Republicans attempting to work an extreme right agenda on the state of Illinois. Illinois is a moderate state. You know, it's a moderate state. It's not an extreme state. And the Rauner agenda is extreme. I think you make a good point that he came here without any governmental experience, and I wouldn't hold that against him, so long as he came into government with an open mind, asking people, work with me, asking people, how can we get this done? He could have gone to those prior Republican governors, but he has unilaterally rejected their advice.
When you say that Illinois is a moderate state, I mean, there are people in other part in the state, and I've watched this from the press box, where there are a lot of times where the city of Chicago is accused of causing a lot of our problems, being a source of so many of our issues that we are in now, whether it's the pensions or the corruption in the city of Chicago. I've seen really people just yell about, you know, this bill is good if you live in Chicago. What do you say to people in the rest of the state who feel that that's the case?
Well, Illinois is one state with many parts. Chicago is an urban area. Far downstate Illinois is very rural. As you travel the state, you meet a lot of different people, a lot of different concerns. Concerning Chicago, why Chicago historically has been the economic engine for the state of Illinois. And if you look at the tax receipts under the Illinois income tax, the vast majority comes from Chicago, but then the money is spent statewide. And so in the government and in the legislature, why we make good effort to reconcile all of these differences, recognize competing legitimate interest, reconcile the differences, and try and be responsive to the problems of everybody in the state, Chicago plus the suburbs, plus the central part of the state, plus the downstate section. Obviously, it's not an easy job. It's made easier if people are cooperating, if people are reasonable, if people are not trying to advance an extreme agenda.
And when the governor gave his budget address, he mentioned that there was a grand bargain in the works in the Senate and that he would not interfere. What would you say happened in the weeks after that?
I would say that the grand bargain started to develop in a way that the governor didn't like, so he did get involved. And relative to the grand bargain, what it really means is that people are talking to each other, attempting to interact with each other. Same thing happens in the House. We have a caucus meeting scheduled for tomorrow, and the topic in the meeting will be the budget. And so everybody is here, everybody is working, everybody would like to end the impasse. I think if you were to poll the members of the legislature, it would be unanimous. I'd like to end the impasse. And I'm sure that the citizens of the state feel the same way.
They felt that way for a while. I know when I first started coming down here, after the funds were cut on World Autism Day to autism programs, to the Epilepsy Foundation of Illinois, drug cessation programs, Meals on Wheels, just countless programs, I spoke with Representative Sullivan, who said, well, the state is struggling. Everyone's going to have to suffer. Would you say that that's been the case over the last during the budget impasse? Because it seems to a lot of people that the vulnerable have been mm-hmm. suffering the most, the elderly, yeah. the disabled, students. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the people? I mean, it seems as though there is almost there are casualties in this battle of the wills. Mm-hmm. How do we help those people?
By resolving these differences. The historic fact is that Governor Rauner hijacked the Illinois budget-making process in order to leverage the implementation of his agenda on workers' compensation, collective bargaining, prevailing wage. He attempted to hold hostage the budget-making. He's been successful. But the people that have been held hostage would be the people in Illinois who depend upon state funding for autism services, mm-hmm. the people in Illinois who depend upon state funding for breast cancer screenings, the people in Illinois who depend upon state funding for child abuse prevention, and the people in Illinois who depend upon state funding for sexual assault services. Those are the people who have been held hostage. Those are the people that have been hurt. They should not have been hurt. But let's not forget, I did not propose holding hostage the budget-making process. I did not propose that. Governor Rauner proposed it. He's done it for 2 years. He's very clear, very straightforward, and he would say, I'm not going to do a budget until I get changes in workers' compensation, collective bargaining, prevailing wage. That drives down the wages and the standard of living of middle-class families, sends workers to the emergency room and to welfare.
You've talked about how Governor Rauner, his approach is that he is, one, holding hostage the budget, and that he has this right agenda. What values do you bring when you approach any sort of situation? What is your strategy when it comes to making a deal or working with people on both sides of the aisle?
Here again, I've done this for a long time. If you don't believe me, read the Tribune. I'll explain it to you.
They sure will.
Okay. I've done it for a long time. 8 prior governors. The last 7, we always had a budget. Why? Because after we worked through our partisan differences, we recognized that we had to be reasonable on the budget making. We adopted a budget so that the services of the state would be delivered to the people that need the services of the state. The state would properly fund education. We would properly fund human services. We would properly fund the child welfare program, the child support program. All those things happened under 7 prior governors, 4 of whom were Republican.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are listening to the interview that I had the good fortune of being able to secure with the Speaker of the House, Michael Madigan, in the state of Illinois. Here's part 2 of our interview.
And people would say that, you know, a lot of the problem also is because of the failure to meet our obligation when it comes to pensions. And I spoke to a representative who told me that he had served in the 80s and that the pensions had been used kind of as a credit card and that people didn't really fully understand what the implications would be down the road. Would that be your assessment?
Well, 2 things happened. The pension systems were underfunded, exactly what you just said. In addition, the benefit level was increased through legislation signed by governors. And the people supporting those benefit enhancements in the pensions were both Democrats and Republicans. Put the 2 together, and that's why there's such a funding shortfall in the state pension systems today.
And the other thing that people point to are their taxes. You know, people, this is something, these are the words that people hear. I want lower taxes, or we pay too much in taxes. Mm-hmm. If we tax the wealthy, then that will drive jobs. The millionaires will leave the state and create businesses in other states. What I've been researching is the flat tax, and I know that you've been here just shortly after the Constitution made the flat tax part of our state, and that was when inequality between the wealthy and the working class was much closer than it is now. Can you tell us a little bit about how we really do, maybe is there a way to modernize our tax system in Illinois? I know that's a much bigger thing. Maybe it's part of the broader picture.
No, it's a good legitimate question, a good legitimate point. Illinois has a flat tax system on its income tax. That's a result of the Constitutional Convention in 1969 and 1970. By the way, the person you're talking to was a delegate at that convention.
Okay. I thought you might have been.
Right. That could be changed. There could be a constitutional amendment which has been offered before the legislature, that would make the Illinois income tax a progressive tax, like almost every state in the nation, including the federal income tax. So the federal income tax is a progressive tax. It has rising brackets.
Right.
Same thing could happen in a state, and it could happen in this state. Illinois is a modern, big state with a lot of problems and a lot of people in the state that need government help.
Right.
If you start with that and you accept that, well, then you're going to need money to pay for that, all right? And the question there is, well, should there be fair distribution among those paying the tax or not? The flat tax does not result in a fair distribution, but the progressive tax would.
And that seems as though, I mean, what would it take to get there? Is there political will on both sides?
Well, there's strong political will. You would need a resolution of the legislature adopted by 3/5 in the legislature. So I say there's strong will. I'm not sure if it's at level 3/5. But there's a good amount of support in the legislature and in the general population,
I would think,
for the proposition there should be a progressive income tax, which translated means that if you make more money, you pay more money.
It would make sense.
Right.
Now, you mentioned that you were a delegate at the Constitutional Convention, and you've been in office 1971?
I started in 1971.
There's part of the governor's agenda is term limits. Hmm. What do you have to tell the people when it comes to this push for term limits? Because I've seen in other states there have been mixed results.
Yeah. I support term limits as administered by the voters of the state of Illinois. I stand for election every 2 years, in a primary and a general election. In the last primary election, the Rauner people spent over $1 million in Illinois House District to try and defeat me. And the people of my district voted for me and returned me to the legislature. So the best implementation of term limits is one administered by the voters of the state.
I've wondered about that. I've wondered about your district because it does seem, I mean, that's what people seem to not understand is if something's working for you in your community, that makes sense. But I think that people in the rest of the state of Illinois feel like what's not working for them, they feel like that you're part of that problem. Mm-hmm. Can you tell them why you are working, what the broader picture is, why it's so important to protect workman's comp, why it's important to protect retirement funding, mm-hmm. important to protect to increase the wages for the state of Illinois?
Yeah. It's all about quality of life for working people. We're not talking about quality of life for wealthy people. We're talking about quality of life for people that go to a job, only ask for a decent salary, which would enable them to pay rent, pay a mortgage, educate children, care for the elderly in the twilight of their lives. That's what we're talking about. And for me, the idea that for working people, people that just go to a job, we're going to reduce their benefit level if they're injured on the job. We're going to eliminate their right to bargain collectively on wages and conditions of employment, and we're going to eliminate the prevailing wage in the construction industry. It's just a reduction in wages and standard of living for working people, and it drives injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room. That's what it's all about. That's what's happened in other states, and that's what I don't support.
One of the things that I've talked to former Senator Dan Katowski about is that if you pay now or pay later. And it's been very hard for me to explain that to listeners because there's a lot of cynicism. There's a lot of apathy in the state of Illinois when it comes to our political system. Is there something you can say that you think you can say to them to encourage them to become part of the solution?
Mm-hmm. I would encourage them to register to vote and to vote. and to vote their interest as they see their interest. That's the beauty of America.
Right.
That's the beauty of Illinois. Everybody can vote, but you have to do it, okay? And I have a favorite expression on American elections, which is the people that win American elections are the people that vote. If you don't vote, you lose. And Hillary Clinton can speak to that with great expertise.
Well, that was one of the things that drove me crazy during the primaries was only 16%. In the gubernatorial race, only 16% of voters showed up in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And sometimes you get what you get.
Well, people should vote.
People should vote. Well, one of the things the governor has said that he is seeking is a permanent property tax freeze. And again, that's something that people find alluring because, oh, yes, let's stop paying something. Let's stop the increases here. Why is that something that you fight against?
Well, he talks about a freeze. The House of Representatives has already adopted a real estate tax relief package, which does not freeze but reduces taxes for certain real estate taxpayers, mainly small homeowners. And so the House package would increase exemptions known as the homestead exemption, the senior citizen exemption, the senior freeze exemption. It's targeted tax relief to real estate taxpayers that are needy, in need of help. The governor would just freeze across the board, which means both wealthy and not so wealthy people would get the benefit. Plus, if you're concerned about institutions such as the Chicago Board of Education, which is severely short of funding even today, that would limit their ability to keep the schools open in Chicago and to open them up in September. Those are the problems with the governor's suggestion. In the case of Governor Rauner, you have to understand that just about everything he does is poll-driven. They do multiple polls. They're polling all of the time. And they predicate governmental decision-making almost exclusively on the polls. So it's easy to say, let's freeze the taxes across the board. It's better to say, let's give some targeted real estate tax relief to people that really need it without hurting school districts like Chicago. Mm-hmm. And if you're a Chicagoan, I think everybody would want them to finish the current school year and open up in September on time.
That's something, and I know that the school year is something that is a goal often when it comes to budget decisions. Yeah, we were talking a little bit about Governor Rauner's experience, previous experience as a businessman, as somebody who is able to make the right investments, make the right decisions. And people seem to value that. A lot of people said, well, if he can run a business, surely he can run a state. And I've argued about this on my show with people, the idea that somehow that's admirable to accumulate that kind of power in the business world and then transfer that over to running a government. People feel as though you've been in office for such a long time that you've accumulated a tremendous amount of power. And that to them, you know, there are a lot of people who call for, you know, term limits for leaders. What do you have to say to people when it comes to that, the experience or whether or not you've accumulated this much power that you somehow, I mean, people feel as though you have a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. I would refer you to the remarks that you used earlier coming from Governor Edgar, where Governor Edgar appeared at Southern Illinois University and he talked about power relationships in the Illinois government and relative to my alleged power, he said even a weak governor's got more power than the speaker does. Okay, so Edgar's an experienced governmental official. He's in a position to speak from his experience and to give us some insight, which I think is very accurate in this case.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we continue with the final part of our interview with Speaker Michael Madigan.
When Representative Feigenholz was on Steve Cochran's show last week on WGN, he really wants you on his show too, by the way. He's on in the mornings, so there might be more people listening, just so you know.
He really doesn't help his case.
Really? What has he said? I'm not familiar.
I don't know the gentleman.
One of the things that she asked him to do was to look at the history of the state of Illinois and how many times a budget has come across the governor's desk and how many times we've had a budget. But she also told me to ask you what you've been reading lately. She recommended I ask you that because I've been reading about our second governor of Illinois and I've been fascinated about that, Governor Coles. Mm-hmm. And to that, I was wondering, what you see yourself, you know, in the broader picture in the history of Illinois. We're approaching our 200th birthday. 40 years, sir.
Right. Do you want to know what I'm reading?
Yes, I do.
I don't know the name of the book, but it's concerned with voting habits in Louisiana.
Okay.
And the author is from the Berkeley, California, very liberal, and she spent a great deal of time with Republican voting working people in Louisiana.
I'm familiar. I don't know the name either.
Right,
yes.
Where there's a great deal of environmental problems in the state. You know, there's leaking oil refineries and pipelines are broken. And bottom line, why working people in Louisiana, despite these environmental problems, are voting Republican. They're voting for Republicans that want to reduce the funding or eliminate the Federal Environmental Protection Agency.
Correct.
Even though they've got real serious problems in Louisiana. And the author makes the point that there are other considerations. There's church-going considerations. There is the idea that, okay, there's a trade-off here, and I'll do the trade-off so long as I have a decent job. If I'm a pipe fitter in a refinery, I'm going to get a decent salary and decent level of compensation, and I'll live with the bad environment because it's a decent trade-off that I'm willing to do. It's a very interesting book. And the author spent 4 to 5 years very intimate contact with these families. They would invite her to their family meals, and she could listen to political discussions within a family. And when I say a family, it's 10 to 15 people.
Right.
Right. But a big point she made was the influence of churches, Protestant churches, evangelical churches, and people use the word churched. Mm-hmm. Somebody's churched, and that easily relates to Republican voting in Louisiana.
And so do you think that the Democrats then, I mean, what's the path forward for Democrats? Because right now they're certainly afloat.
Well, let's not forget that the Democratic candidate for president won the popular vote. Let's not forget that. So, you know, in America, why people voted for Hillary Clinton. Given the electoral system, Donald Trump was elected as the president. So I know there's a lot of commentary that the Democratic Party is in trouble and it needs to change. And in the Democratic Party will change. There's no question about that. But let's not forget that we did win the popular vote in the last presidential election. And here in Illinois, we're a party that doesn't agree with the idea that the government should be used to reduce wages and standard of living. Because that's the Rauner proposal. The Rauner proposal would say, let's change history. If you go back to the election of Franklin Roosevelt in 1932, prior to Roosevelt's election, the federal government wasn't greatly involved in the management of the economy.
Right.
But when Roosevelt became the president in 1933, federal government became very active using the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and the Congress in managing the economy. And from 1933 until today, both Democratic and Republican presidents and members of the Congress have always worked to raise wages, raise the standard of living. The Federal Reserve does a great deal of that right now. Here in Illinois, the Rauner proposal is, let's change that history. Let's not have the government working to raise wages in the standard of living. Let's have the government work to lower wages in the standard of living by bringing down the benefit level and workers' compensation, taking away the right to bargain collectively if you work for a government,
right,
and if you work in the construction industry, taking away the prevailing wage. That's the proposal. And it would be a proposed change in history. I don't support it.
Well, I know that you had WGN Radio broadcast that they reported that you have sent representatives to hopefully work with Governor Rauner in the hopes of finding a compromise.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What are you hopeful?
We're within 3 to 4 weeks of the scheduled adjournment,
right,
of the legislature. And as you know, Governor Rauner has attempted to hold hostage the Illinois budget making to get what he wants on off-budget issues.
Right.
So whether you like it or whether you don't, the consideration of the off-budget issues will be here. It will happen in the Capitol building. In light of that, I appointed some of the best representatives in the House, Representative Curry and Representative Lang and Hoffman and Turner, is a negotiating team to work with the governor or whomever he designates on the off-budget issues. Now, the off-budget issues are brought to us by the governor. They're not brought to us by people in the legislature. They're brought to us by the governor. We want to have a good quality discussion, a good quality negotiation on these issues. The people that I appointed are some of the best in the House, and they know these issues with great detail. So if the governor wishes, it could be a very fruitful discussion, very fruitful negotiation. I would prefer to do what we've done 7 times under Governor Rauner. Put aside his extreme agenda and just adopt a budget. That's important to remember. Over 2 years under Governor Rauner, The governor and the legislature have done 7 budget-making bills. So today there's this comment, well, there is no budget.
Right.
If you just take it as there is no budget, you could think to yourself, well, they haven't adopted any budget bills. Well, that's not true. We've adopted 7 budget bills where the governor has dropped the extreme agenda. That's what I would prefer to do. That's what I've recommended for 2 years because of the debt situation of the state. The state today owes $13 billion to people and companies that have provided services and products to the state of Illinois. People are being made to wait for their money. $13 billion. That should not happen. That should be corrected. We should be busy correcting that budget problem.
It seems as though it's for people when they hear the number $13 billion, how do you ever recapture that? How do you ever catch up?
Well, it's given rise to a new business. And so there's a business with good financial backing that will get the vouchers that these providers have and buy the voucher. And they wait for the state money because in Illinois, after 90 days, you get 1% a month when you wait for your money.
Right.
That's 12% a year.
Yeah, it's it has been drastic for a lot of people I know that provide social services that help the elderly. I asked briefly in between another question. How do you see your role in the broader picture in the history of Illinois? As we approach our 200th anniversary.
Sure. I've been here a long time, and people have asked me that question. Usually, the question is framed by asking, "Well, what do you think your legacy will be?"
Mm.
Yeah, my legacy will be my family.
Okay.
A wonderful wife and 4 children. You know, one of the children, Lisa, the Attorney General of
Illinois. Familiar. I think I've heard.
There are 3 other children, and they all go to work. And 2 of them have families, and they've provided for 4 grandchildren. So that's my legacy. It's family-related, and that's something I'm very comfortable with.
Before we go, what do you want the legacy to be for the citizens of Illinois? What do you want them to experience?
The best experience that they can possibly have. I mean, that's the promise of America. So the promise of America is come to our shores, go to a job, work, care for your family, right? That's the promise of America. That's what should be happening in Illinois today. It's not happening because this particular government is not functioning well. My view is it's not functioning well because we have an extreme governor trying to advance an extreme agenda on the people of Illinois, which would just drive down wages and the standard of living.
I lied. I have 1 more question, maybe 2. Well, somebody asked me to ask you this. How do you unwind? What do you do to relax? Play golf? Do you watch TV? What do you do? Racquetball? I don't know.
I use an exercise bike in the morning, which I did today. I spend time with my family. I try to golf. I'm honest about it. Right.
That's
you know, when you ask people, do you golf? Oh, yeah, I golf. Well, I try because it's not pretty when I'm out there.
I cut the grass around the ball. That's what I do. Very, very, very small patches of cut grass. My other question is, would you consider letting us catch up with you again if I could interview you as things go on?
Right.
Hopefully things improve in the state of Illinois.
We certainly hope so.
Yeah. I appreciate your time so much, sir.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Right. More after this on 720.
And that is our interview with Speaker Michael Madigan of the state of Illinois. And the book that he referred to in our interview is Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right, and that is by sociologist Arlie Hochschild. So that is the book he was talking about. And again, hopefully we will have the opportunity to ask more questions as we get closer to the deadline for our budget in the state of Illinois, which is May 31st. It is time now for our news. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio South. I am in Springfield in our state capitol. I'm actually in the basement of our capitol. I kind of wish I was back home in the Allstate Showcase Studio, Michigan Avenue, sitting alongside Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist and editorial board member for the Chicago Tribune. Scott, I want to say how amazing that video is that you have, the evolution of your piece. Everyone should go to Scott's Facebook page. Is that link also on ChicagoTribune.com yet?
It is not.
Okay, go to his Facebook page because there's a cool video of him creating the cartoon immediately after the firing.
Deadline cartooning at its best.
It's super cool. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later.
Hey,
I wish I was...
Real quick, quick, congratulations on your interview. My God, do you know how many political reporters are eating their guts out tonight because you got that?
I don't know. It was hard for me to listen because I had all my notes, I had all my questions, I got to everything. You know, we'll talk more about that later, and you and I can go and have a glass of wine. Maybe we should go to the Lincoln Park Uncorked event. See what I did there?
Yes, nice work.
Excellent. Hi, Robin. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having us on the show.
And thank you for accommodating us. I know we're behind a little bit, but things came up, and so thank you so much for understanding.
No problem. Congrats.
Thank you. And also joining us is Peter, the owner of Vin Chicago, correct?
Yes. Hi, Patty.
Hello, hello. Tell us a little bit about this event coming up on May 11th.
So this is Lincoln Park Uncorked, and it's an Armitage Halstead wine stroll. So it's a great way to see the neighborhood. We'll have retailers. We'll have all sorts of businesses that'll be open late. The event's actually from 6 to 9. You'll get two samples, a red and a white sample, and each of the different restaurants. We have 15 restaurants that are participating for this stroll, so we're really excited about it.
And also, this comes with some bites along the way.
It does.
Nice.
One of our favorites, Gejas Cafe, of course.
Hello. Wait a minute.
I know. It's so funny. We're the biggest fans in the world. We love them. And Jeff Lawler is amazing. And, you know, so they're great. So they'll be there. Also, On Target Living, they're actually pairing up with Barry's Boot Camp. So you'll go to Barry's Boot Camp. You'll get to see their great new space. And then On Target Living, she'll actually give us some healthier bites to go along with our wine. And then Kincaid's will also be giving us some pizza and some bites as well.
Oh, also so delicious. I appreciate the healthy choices. Now, I don't know, Scott Santos, have you ever been to Gejas Cafe?
I have not.
Oh, baby, come on.
Where have I been?
I don't know. It is an incredible dining experience. It's all fondue. It's all everything
Ooh.
In you, and it's a kind of where you also cook your chicken or your beef, and you get, and oh my God, everything is so good. I can't really describe it well enough. Can you, Robin?
The entire experience, you walk in and it's beautiful. It's beautifully lit. It's intimate, and it's one of those things. It's perfect for a romantic evening. It's also fun if you have friends and you just want to go somewhere and escape and have some cheese, have some chocolate, have some great wine. And they treat everyone like a VIP. It is it is one of my favorite places in Chicago. They're amazing.
You had me at cheese.
The cheese is so good.
Oh, and the chocolate too.
I know.
And Peter, tell us a little bit about Vin.
Sure. Well, we're on Elston Avenue, 1826 North Elston, and we've actually been there 30 years. It was 30 years last November, and we're right in the Steel District, right across the street from where the scrapyards used to be, in between a foundry and a smelter. And we love it there, right on the outskirts of Lincoln Park. And just wine, a big store, though it doesn't look like it from the outside, and one of the few wine specialty stores in Chicago.
So they're the perfect partner for this event.
Oh, no doubt about this. Now, what was the catalyst behind this? What inspired the idea for the Lincoln Park Uncorked?
Anything that we can do to get people into the neighborhood, to engage in businesses that they may, to walk into a business that they may not have normally walked into. We have Artifact, All She Wrote, Bedside Manor, which are all great retail stores. But we also have some places that that are a little unexpected. We have Dream Dry.
Please tell me, what is Dream Dry? Because I'm looking at that.
So Dream Dry is a blow dry bar.
Okay.
So they're brand new. They just opened. I know, for fellas, look it up.
I know.
I got a lot of puzzled looks in the studio.
I was thinking that Scott would be like, pardon me?
What?
So just look it up, Google it. But yeah, they're fantastic. And they're actually new to the neighborhood. So we're really excited to have them as part of this stroll. We also have, Banks, Bridgeview Bank will be our guest check-in. So that's where people will come to see us. Byline Bank is also one of the wine stops. And then also real estate. We have Coldwell Banker and Conlon will also be there. So it's such a nice way to meet people in the neighborhood. Meet neighbors, go into businesses, have wine. It's a really relaxed way to stroll around.
Now, Peter, where are you from? And this sounds like so much fun. I hope that I'm back home in time.
I know, come home.
To join you. I need wine so badly. Peter, where are you from originally?
I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, up north in Glencoe.
Okay.
And
mark it, Michael. We got one that said exactly where he's from. It's exciting. <Got it.
laughs> And I moved back to Chicago it's almost 20 years ago and joined my dad in the business. He's been selling wine for nearly 60 years. And his dad had a small liquor store before that. So our families were doing this for a while. And I never thought I'd get roped into it, but ended up in it. And it's a fun business. You can't go wrong with wine.
I know. I almost I've never taught anybody who's like, well, my family's in the liquor business.
It's not a bad thing.
It is. You sound very happy about it.
Well, I have a table full of wine in front of me right now. So
I know.
The bubbly is getting ready to go. I don't think we can wait much more on that.
No. Go. We're gonna take a break here, and we want to talk about that. I want Scott to. Scott, are you up for the challenge?
Sure. Did you hear that?
I was like, who could we get to come in and talk about the firing of FBI Director Comey and who will enjoy wine? Yes. You were the first person. Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. More with our guests when we come back on Pretty Late, 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studios South. I am in Springfield, in the basement of our state capitol. And I know that Scott Santis just tried to FaceTime with me, and I don't seem to be able to FaceTime back with you. He is live in our Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, hopefully enjoying some wonderful wine from Vin Chicago. Thank you to our friend Peter. And we have Robin in studio. We are talking about Lincoln Park Uncorked 2017, a wine stroll coming up on May 11th. It's just really too well. Do you consider this to be Wednesday morning, everybody? Where are you guys at on our clock? Because I think of it as still Tuesday night.
Yeah, we'll go with Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, are there tickets available for purchase ahead of time, or are they able to do that on site?
So, tickets are almost sold out, which is fantastic. So, if you are planning to attend, please reserve your tickets before Thursday, because I think we're going to sell out.
Oh, congratulations!
Thank you. We're so excited.
Excellent. And Scott, are you enjoying any of the beverages?
my mic is on. The button says it's not, but I am.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I got confused. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, we're having champagne. Champagne.
Oh, very
a little Prosecco.
Nice. Oh, there you go.
And it's lovely.
Now, explain, because Prosecco is a little bit sweeter. Is that right?
It is. So Prosecco is sparkling wine like champagne, but it's from Italy. And tends to have just a tiny bit of sweetness to it. So very soft, very easy, just fun. All occasion, even for the radio. Perfect.
Soft for the radio.
Especially for the radio.
Soft and easy is a great way to go, I think. Scott, your thoughts? It's delightful, you said?
It is delightful. It's dry, am I correct? I mean,
it's not super dry, sweet. Just off dry.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Tiny hint of sweetness.
Yes.
Off dry. Are you, now, Scott, are you more of a white wine drinker, or do you have a preference?
Red.
Me too.
A rich, heavy red, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to open the red.
Oh, here we go. Listen to this.
You can enjoy it virtually here, Patty.
Now, what are we pouring?
So, let's see. So
open. God, that sounded good. That was well done.
So we have a, it's French wine, Chateau de Peraza, from the Minervois region in the Languedoc. So from the south of France, a blend, red blend, so popular lately. But they've been doing them in France forever. So it is one of our favorite bargains, and one of the wines it'll be sampled at the wine walk.
Excellent.
Well, we'll pour this in glass number two here and pass this around.
Pour some of this into Scott.
That
sounds so good. I never realized a taster for this.
Nice. I never realized how good the microphones were in studio until I wasn't there able to enjoy the actual. Now I know why people get so upset when we drink on the air, Scott.
Right.
Excellent nose.
Yes, you do have a wonderful nose.
No, it's big and French. That's what it is. Grape? Is this a fairly... Which year is this?
It's 2013.
Okay.
So it's their current release. And the wine, you look at it, it looks like a pretty expensive bottle. I'll show Scott and Robin here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of classic. It's Chateau. So if it's a French wine, it says Chateau. Has a picture of a house. That house needs to exist. You know, you can't make it up.
Okay.
It's against the law in France to do that.
Oh.
Cuvée Spéciale. But it's $10 a bottle.
You're kidding.
What?
Oh, this is great. This would be, let me try to explain this in a way that doesn't make me sound like I read a book. So now I know things.
Yeah, wonderful. Good way to find out. Okay, this would be what? Oh, what's happening? Oh,
peppery?
A lot of smacking. Okay.
Am I right there?
Absolutely.
Goodfish Light. It's not. It's not an old wine. It's not an old vine wine.
No, so it's not tannic. It's not astringent. It doesn't make your mouth pucker up. But it's kind of a lot of intensity to it. But have it by itself. Have it with food. It's one of the wines we'll be pouring at the wine walk on Thursday. And it's just a fun bottle of wine. And it's one of those things that, you know, people think you need to spend a lot to get a really tasty bottle. And if you go off the beaten path, there's some really cool wines out there. And this just happens to be one of my favorites, so I made sure we were pouring this on Thursday.
And the great thing is about on Thursday, when guests arrive, they'll receive a passport, and it'll actually have a map, of course, with all the wine stops. But then it'll also include the wines that you'll be tasting at each of the wine stops. So as you go in and you can sample the wines, you can mark if you like them, if you don't like them. And all these, of course, are available at Ben Chicago. But, you know, for me, I tend to be more on the white wine side, but it's great when you're able to actually sample them and then take notes so that when you go back to the store, it's about more than the label. You know, it's
right.
About a specific wine that you enjoy.
Yeah, but the white wine has a screw top, so it won't be nearly as...
It does, and it's got a pretty cool label on it, too.
Oh,
I bought this because of the label,
what is that,
by the way.
Kung Fu Girl?
Kung Fu Girl.
Ooh.
Are you guys ready for...
Yeah.
Patty,
yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Try another one.
All right,
mm-hmm.
Screw cap here. We can get some sound effects.
Oh.
There we go.
It's like you're there.
It is like I'm there. So very thirsty.
I hope someone's bringing you wine.
So no. Are you in the basement of the Capitol?
I am in the basement. I have a bottle of water and a Twix bar too.
No.
Well, it's okay. I'm fine.
And the
I'm
security
fine.
Guard who comes by and sneers at you once in a while?
No, never. They see me come in. They're like, oh, she's going back to the basement. We know what she's up to down there.
So we have the Kung Fu Girl poured now. So it's a Riesling from Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the Prosecco, it's just off dry. Just a tiny bit of sweetness to it. Like perfect, think sushi. Sushi, Thai food.
Mm-hmm.
And the winemaker for this is actually in town. I just came from an event at Navy Pier. Wine Spectator put a big grand tasting on. And Charles Smith, it was a really well-known, huge, huge man. With an explosion of hair. I mean, just explosion of hair.
What a great way to describe someone.
And once you see him, you'll never forget him. And he's the winemaker on this. And this was actually one of Wine Spectator's top 100 wines of the year last year. But not, once again, $10 a bottle.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I'm not a big Riesling guy, but this is like Riesling for men.
Yes. No, exactly.
It's not like super sweet.
It's not super sweet.
It's like a perfect summer wine. This is perfect.
Yep. That sounds like your brand, Scott.
Yes,
Riesling for men.
Riesling. It's Riesling.
I kind of
for
love
men.
That. Peter, I wanted to ask you, you're talking about these wines that you brought in studio. Are these mass-produced, like big commercial vineyards, or are they smaller batch and therefore there's a little more quality control and what the taste? I mean, there's when you have like, and I love store-bought wines as well, but sometimes you have that sense it's a little more, you know, in order to maintain that exact same taste in every bottle, there's almost, it tastes like they're chemical, a little more chemically. Would that be?
These are all pretty small producers. The Ballon Prosecco. Tiny family producer over in Italy. I don't know the production, but it's in the probably thousands or 5,000-6,000 cases. The Paraza as well, very small, and it's an estate wine, which is something that's really neat. A lot of wines, some of the big brand names, they have a name on it, but they don't come from a specific vineyard.
Right.
Whereas like the Chateau Paraza, the family owns a vineyard. It comes from a specific spot. Every year it comes from the same vines. And it really adds what we call a sense of place. So the wine tastes, you mentioned the spiciness, and it tastes the same, and it tastes of a certain style that matches up when you visit the area, matches up with what you see and the foods you taste there. So it's some small batch wines or smaller production wines. There's some really, really neat stuff there.
I agree. There is a distinction between. I mean, like I said, I like myself some store bought commercial brand name, big name brand. But the when you taste those smaller vineyards, they're really it's something special. I want to remind everyone that this is our friends from Lincoln Park, and the I want to thank the Lincoln Park Chamber of Commerce for their great event coming up on May 11th, the Lincoln Park Uncorked 2017 and Armitage Halstead Wine Stroll. It's an opportunity to stroll through one of Chicago's most famous shopping districts right in the heart of Lincoln Park. Thank you guys so much, and continue to booze up Scott Santis. More after this on 720 WGN. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studios South. I am in Springfield, Illinois. I'm actually in the basement of our state capitol. Joining us in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue is Scott Santis, the political cartoonist, editorial board member of the Chicago Tribune. And he quickly whipped up a cartoon. How often do you have to do a cartoon this quickly,
you
Scott.
Know, I mean, I needed more of a reason, but I'm walking out the door. Patty, I was done with my cartoon for the day. I'm walking out the door. CNN is on, and they say breaking news. And you know, cable news now, everything's breaking news. You know,
right.
Tomorrow
right.
will be Wednesday.
Right.
And so I go, okay, what the hell is this? And it comes up, I'm just saying, can't these jerks in the White House, like, I have a deadline. Couldn't they have announced this in the morning?
I know.
So I literally put the cartoon aside and sat down and drew this. And actually, it came to me fairly quickly, so happily. And, yeah, in less than an hour, it was done and on the Chicago Tribune website.
So the firing of FBI Director Comey is this is just surreal, and the from what I understand, because it's been a busy day here in Springfield as well, but from what I understand, the reason given by the White House is that in his testimony last week, he talked about the emails that were I can never pronounce Anthony Weiner's wife's name, and I apologize for even putting it that way,
but you got to say Weiner, so.
Yeah, that was really the end game, wasn't it? Do you know how to say his wife's name?
I don't.
Hillary Clinton's aide had these emails that were somewhere that he said that hundreds, perhaps thousands of emails had been forwarded to Anthony Weiner's laptop, and that they were classified, and this was the part of the investigation. And the White House said today that that was part of why, or was that their entire reason? Was that
yes.
he had misrepresented the number of emails, which they now say was a handful, and many of them weren't even classified, were only classified after the fact?
Well, the memorandum issued by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, pretty much, I really believe that, by the way, he was sworn in less than 2 weeks ago, and it lays out the reason why, if you're a Democrat, you want James Comey to be fired. And I really believe that they thought that if they couch it in that language, that the Democrats and the Republicans never cared for much anyway. So, and the Democrats would go, okay, we're down with that.
Right.
The hypocrisy ometer is going off the scale this evening. It was hilarious to see Democrats all of a sudden say, Comey's a great guy. We love him. James, you knucklehead. Who'd want to get rid of him? You know, when just 24 hours before he's the most loathed man in the Democratic Party. Republicans, of course, loved him, then hated him, then loved him again during the course of the campaign, including the current president who has on numerous occasions talked about how James Comey did a public service by releasing
yes.
these emails or
yeah.
saying that they were still investigating these things. It really does seem to come down to, and I've worked really hard tonight. I want to assure you and your listeners that I went to a lot of to conservative sites, my usual, National Review and for one, which I'm reading from right now. And, all of these are, they're all saying, the best thing people can say right now, the best I've heard so far is, huh?
It is a head scratcher.
Well, but then the rest of the ones that are more cynical, like me, I think Comey continued to say and that they were investigating the ties of the Trump campaign to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, according to a story posted this evening on Politico, fascinating, by the way, you should go and read this thing. It's a shorty, so you could read it during the break. don't stop listening to us because, you know,
right.
you don't want to do that.
Both.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But it talks about how, I mean, Trump is unhinged. I mean, we all knew this, but he apparently yells at the TV. My grandfather, my dad didn't start doing that until he was in his 80s.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, okay. There. So he yells at the TV about the investigation. I continue to gall him that this continued to go on. And I have to believe that he finally said, okay, we're going to put an end to it. This is the end. Get rid of Comey. That stops the investigation. Well, guess what, you Cheeto-flavored
wow,
dumbass?
Ooh.
This is just going to make it worse. This is going. The Democrats now are going to have even a stronger thing to run on in the 2018 midterms. They're going to do very well. I think the Republicans could lose the House on this. The math in the Senate's a little dicier for the Democratic Party. But, okay, let's say the Democrats take the House. You don't think there's going to be investigations galore now on this on these connections? You don't think this raises people's ire? This, if you have an IQ above room temperature, you have to look at this, and your curiosity has to be piqued a little bit, right?
Well, there are friends of mine on Facebook, and actual friends of mine who are ardent Donald Trump supporters. They love President Trump, and this is another decision that he has made. That they are. One woman wrote, "Thank God, it's about time that he fired him. It's time for that guy to go." And that kind of that. Those are some of the posts. And of course, I see the, you know, a lot of the other, you know, people kind of some people kind of freaking out that this is such uncharted territory. Even with your cartoon and a lot of people talking about President Nixon. There, you know, this is so one. It's so quick, right? It's so soon into the. We're just past 100 days. The machine in which President Nixon put into motion, that was a much. There was so much more going on. There's so many different moving pieces that were already entrenched. This is just so bizarre, and like some of it, so much of it seems almost. I don't know if it's arbitrary. It's confusing, Scott, and I don't.
Well,
I don't
it's confusing, and also the way it was handled. I mean,
yes,
just something. I mean, you and I have talked about this. I am particularly sensitive to just treating people well. You know, being polite. Well, Trump has never been that guy, right? So mm-hmm. he didn't even have the. You know, the cojones, the ovaries, the good sense, the kindness to tell this guy
right.
that he was fired first. You know how he found out? He's addressing FBI agents in Los Angeles, and in the back of the room, there's large monitors, and they flash up. They had CNN on, and it flashed, Comey fired. He thought they were kidding. He thought it was a
yeah.
joke.
Right.
So he,
right.
So this president, this administration didn't even have the grace to tell this guy before it happened. I mean... Bill Clinton fired an FBI director because they had a devastating ethics report, the internal ethics report in the FBI. He offered the guy, said, you can resign. The guy said no. So Clinton fired him. But that also was a buildup to that. And they had someone in place, someone in mind to take his place immediately after this. This seems like another, like a temper tantrum by an impetuous child. And you know their statement coming out of this is, well, now we're going to start looking for a replacement,
right?
And you just got to go, oh my God, that you didn't think past this. This is one of them. This drives me nuts for someone who has truly an affection for the presidency to see it treated this way. Is beyond the pale. Can I read this real quick? It's a
yes, just
a line now. By even his detractors' accounts, Comey has been an exemplary director in these remaining extensive aspects of the job, particularly in protecting American national security and speaking out about the challenges faced by the nation's police in a toxic anti-police environment. Even in disagreeing with him, Jim Comey's admirers can hope that history will be kinder to him than this moment is. That's from National Review, and the name of the article is A Bipartisan Case Against James Comey.
Wow.
The nastiest thing they could say is he did his job pretty well. So, no, this is to distract us, to get us off the smell of, you know, clearly where there's smoke, maybe there's fire, you know? I've done a cartoon. We've talked about this. The dots between the Russia and the Trump campaign haven't been connecting. Maybe they feel they will. You know, what's your sense of it? I've been babbling. What's your sense?
No, I'm the same way. I'm looking at so many parts of this, and I don't quite know what I mean. I don't know why now. I mean, what difference did it make at this point to keep him or leave him? You have a lot of people are speculating. I guess Comey's supposed to testify again next week about the possible ties to Russia. He's in the middle of this other investigation, and I wonder too, because you know, I believe. And maybe I'm wrong, but I believe that the director of the FBI doesn't necessarily have to come from inside the FBI. Is that right?
Right. In fact, the replacement that Bill Clinton chose was a sitting judge.
Okay.
And very highly rated. Free? I think F-R-E-E-H, I believe.
Okay. Frey? Right. That sounds familiar. And I know I'm racking my brain trying to figure out what, you know, I mean, I guess the mind-boggling thing, too, is that even try to get inside the mind and wonder what they're doing. Because, you know, if you were to promote from the inside, you know, you would have to hope and I would believe that for the most part, the FBI agents who are trained, who have dedicated their lives to protecting American justice would, you know, not be swayed by any sort of politics. But I don't know what happens next. You know, this seems like he could do whatever he wants. Does he put Rudy Giuliani in charge?
Yeah. Does he put Christie in there? Does he put in some other, you know, third tier celebrity who campaigned for him? I mean, seriously. I mean, that's the next question. Who's he going to appoint?
Right.
And
right. What's behind this and who does he appoint? You know, what are the implications of this? It is just bizarre.
It is bizarre. But, you know, how many times a week are we saying that now?
Now we're reaching even high levels that we didn't think were possible quite yet, right?
Just the idea that this guy, first off, didn't know that Andrew Jackson was dead before the beginning of the Civil War. The fact that he clearly has no memory of the Saturday Night Massacre where Nixon got rid of two attorney generals because they refused to fire Cox, the special prosecutor Cox. So, you know, it's like you don't know this, you don't know what the optics of this are.
I know. I don't think this White House is worried about the optics. We are hanging out talking about the firing of FBI Director Comey. I mean, this is the news of the day. And you and I haven't even talked about Sally Yates' testimony. So this is it's all surreal. I want to encourage again anyone who has some thoughts on this. And I do, we've been asking this every week, walk me through your perspective if you really believe that this was a good move. Thank God he did that. It's about time he fired Comey, as far as Trump supporters. I mean, anybody, really. But was this what you were waiting for? Were you hoping that the president, whose list was this on? 312-981-7200. Join the conversation anytime. You can call or text us. Again, that's 312-981-7200. More after this on 720 WGN. Keep on running out. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting live from our Allstate Showcase Studio South. I am in the state capital of Illinois, in Springfield, in the basement, as a matter of fact, of our state capital. I'm staying downtown in Springfield, and I'm staying not too far from the old state capital, where President Lincoln served as a representative. And it's actually right across the street from the building where he served as a lawyer. He had law offices there. It's very strange to be in Springfield and kind of think of history and the presidents we've had, presidents we've, you know, of course, studied in school and presidents we've lived through. And to come to a day like today, to come to the last several weeks, and every time you think things can't get any stranger, they get stranger and stranger. And I get that people support Donald Trump. I get that they have reasons. Is there a complete acceptance of days like today and go, yeah, that sounds right. That sounds like a good idea. Yeah, the FBI director is in the middle of an investigation with the administration, whether or not there are ties to Russia. The attorney general even recused himself from the investigation and then is the one that suggests that the president fire the FBI director. Am I missing anything here, Scott?
No, so far so good. No, yeah, it's amazing to me. Jeff Sessions, who I've mentioned before, he was the Attorney General of Alabama when I worked there at the Birmingham News, and was later elected to the Senate. And Jeff is not one of the smart ones, as we like to say down there.
There was a phrase you used. It wasn't intellectually curious. What was it?
No, he lacks intellectual heft. He has
heft. That's a, yeah.
And you know, and so I'm not going to. But yeah, he recused himself from this investigation, and then with this action, injects himself in the middle of it. I mean, there are so many bad players, so many bad components to this story. That, you know, I would love to hear someone tell me otherwise. Because
why it makes sense.
How
is it anything other than trying to manipulate and control the investigation?
Well, it's, you know what? I mean, okay, I'm going to go there. Can I go there, Patty? I'm going to
go there.
This is the first step, the first crass step of the Putinization of the United States of America.
Ooh. The Putinization.
Yes, this is where we're becoming. Okay, you go after the prosecutors and you go after the journalists. Now, you have some news about a journalist in West Virginia?
Yes, there was a producer. There was an event that Sean Spicer was attending, and I'm trying to get more information about it, but that he was attending and was a reporter was trying to ask questions, and that they were arrested and released on $5,000 bail.
Yeah, that's the M.O. That's the M.O. Listen, I've been on your show for all these years. I was always a never Trump guy. I was a Gary Johnson guy, and I still get laughed at. But if he'd been elected, do you think we'd be having this conversation right now?
No. I see what you're saying. I see.
Of
yes.
course we would.
Dude, no way.
No, dude,
the
colors.
Chill.
That was part of the platform. But regardless, moving back to Donald Trump, I had said that the guy is a fascist. The guy has fascist tendencies, and we went down the checklist. Do you remember that? We said, you know, cult of personality, cult of dynamic action, which means hollow phrases like "we're going to make America great again."
Right.
You know, all of it. Diminishing the press. All of it. I mean, just go down that checklist, and here we are. Now, you know, I have to tell you, I have not spoken about this publicly before, but I'm scared. We talked about it during the break. But I'm a cartoonist, obviously, for the Chicago Tribune and syndicated nationally. And, do you know what's happening to cartoonists around the globe right now? They're getting arrested. They're getting disappeared. They're getting beaten senseless. I'm scared for myself and my family. And yes, we have discussed an exit strategy to leave this country. You think that you're talking about a guy who I am the grandchild of immigrants. You're the daughter of immigrants. Do you know how much they love this country? Do you know what it takes to come here? You have to have a profound passion.
Right.
For this country and its ideals. So the fact that I'm even mentioning publicly that I would leave the United States, I can't tell you how bad that makes me feel, but I also can't tell you how bad I think things may get, especially with today's actions with the firing of James Comey.
And that is the thing, is that there are so many people, it seems, that are willing to go, yeah, no, let's go in this direction. Well, you know, he gets to do what he wants. This is his administration. Or you guys are overreacting. You're being snowflakes. You're being buttercups. You're, you know, oh, we didn't win. You're just, you're a sore loser, Scott, is what you are.
I'm not a sore
loser. For being scared about this, I don't know.
This is unprecedented. This is a tipping point. And I have to tell you and your listeners, this is a tipping point for this country. This is more important than him spouting some crazy stuff on Twitter at 3 a.m. because, as I mentioned before, there's a difference between talking crazy and acting crazy. Mm-hmm. This is acting crazy. This is a total disregard for public opinion, a wanton ignorance of history. I can't disparage this action enough. And there are going to be some that are going to, and like you say, who are going to try and walk this back and say, well, this was the right thing. Listen, Comey's actions during the campaign were questionable, and I think it showed questionable judgment. But this wasn't a surprise to, you know, newly sworn in President Trump. He could have taken care of this in the first week or two of his administration. Why now? If they think for a moment this is going to put the kibosh on the investigation into the link between his campaign and Russia, well, boy, did they miscalculate.
Well, but it also takes will. It takes a political will and those that are, I mean, this is going to take Republicans. This is going to take.
Yeah,
and this is some Republicans strong-willed have come Republicans. Out tonight,
and not just the usual. You know, obviously McCain and oh golly, what's his name from South Carolina, Graham. That do not care for this president, and so have been pretty vocal about that. But there have been the Republican from Nebraska has come out late this evening and come out and said this is inexcusable. If you start seeing more and more Republicans come out, and by the way, this totally obliterates any conversation about the Senate considering the health care plan.
Oh gosh. Well, that's the thing. How often? Oh, they're not. Well, you know, we've heard that it's dead on arrival in the Senate. So is this a way to go? Well, here, look at this shiny thing over here. Or, I mean, as
Dick
Durbin.
I think this is shiny.
This is not shiny. It's very flashy. It seems very flashy.
It's a shiny turd.
But, you know, this is the thing is that Dick Durbin asks if this is another way to distract and to undermine the investigation. And how is it not? How is it? Again, we're asking listeners to join the conversation. How is this not an attempt to derail the investigation of the link between the Trump administration and Russia?
See,
we have a listener who wanted to join the conversation.
Yeah, Joe.
Hey, CEO?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, kiddo, how are you?
We're all right. How are you doing, Pumpkin?
Good. Hey, listen, Scott, did you manage to read the letter, the full publication of what came out today?
Do you mean the two memoranda, the first from the Assistant Attorney General and then Attorney General Sessions?
Yeah. Russin is an appointee of Obama, by the way. Mm-hmm. He was elected to Congress with one dissenting vote out of 300-some-odd people.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a 30-year record as a public servant in justice, if you will. So he's a pretty good guy. So
I'm sorry, are we talking about Comey or Sessions? I'm not sure who you said. I didn't catch it.
No, we're talking about Rod.
Rosen, the guy that wrote the letter to Sessions. And Sessions talked to Trump and said, here's what's going on.
Right.
Okay.
He recommends that he should be, you know, whatever. His main point, aside from the fact that there's no Russian connection, okay, which Comey admitted to three times verbally, was that there's no longer any confidence in the FBI. I'll say one example. You remember probably about 2.5 months ago when Comey basically put Clinton in jail for 15 minutes. And then summed up his conversation after the emails, after the, you know, all the other stuff was going on. He said, oh, by the way, we're not convinced any criminal action should be taken because there is no intent. If you read the laws, that has no bearing.
Well, I agree with you on that, Joe. But I also, what I find fascinating is the hypocrisy of the Democrats. You know, neither party has a corner of this. But I love the fact that they are absolutely loving. Comey may have been, if you listen to them tonight, the best director of the FBI ever in history.
Scott, you're dead nuts on there because hypocrisy is on both sides of the fence. It's like watching a tennis match. Well, we love him or we hate him. Well, we love him, we hate him, whatever. So you're accurate there. But basically the central point, the focal point, was that there's no longer any confidence by the American people in the FBI to do its job. And that goes to the top. That goes to the top.
Well, but let me ask you this, Joe. The memorandum, almost exclusively, the first part of it particularly, from Rosenstein, talks about the Hillary Clinton, the email and the investigation into that, and Comey's, insertion of himself into the campaign. These were also moments, sir, that President Trump, then candidate Trump, trumpeted as good and proper things to happen. Trump, they ran a whole slew of them on the many of the news channels this evening, showing that Trump said, yes, this is a good thing that Comey has said this, and that Trump, in fact, would throw her into jail, if we recall that. It seems peculiar to use, you know, a thing that you use to get yourself elected and that you actually praised and then turn around and
yes,
and disparage it, or at least use it in saying, yes, this is the reason we're getting rid of this guy.
Scott, you put your finger on it before, and I totally agreed with you wholeheartedly. Like watching a tennis match, you had hypocrisy on both sides of the tennis net there. It was a back-and-forth match. People are allowed to change their opinions based on upcoming, current, vital facts, if you will.
Well, I was just going to say, Joe, and to your point, Comey had only a 19% approval rating by a recent poll. Now, whether or not how many people actually knew who Comey was at that poll, I didn't see that that actually said that. But to your point, 19% approval rating is terrible. So he lost. I mean, why do it? The timing stinks. The optics stink.
Timing, Scott, I got to interrupt you there.
Sure.
Timing is one little inconsequential, in my estimation, element. You get back to the IRS scandal. You get back to the conservative programs, if you will, that were investigated by the IRS. You know, for numerous reasons, Comey lost the trust of the American public. Me, number one, I used to think he was a great guy. Thought he was a straight shooter.
And when was that? When was that, Joe?
When did I think he was a good guy?
I'm guessing part of that was last summer when he said that that Hillary Clinton used bad, it's a really bad judgment.
About 2 years ago, I thought the guy was a straight shooter. You know, not longer. He was only 3 years into his program. He was about 1 year into his program.
Uh-huh.
So based on his credentials, I thought this was a good egg.
Uh-huh.
It gradually eroded to the point where right now, not only his own internal people distrust him and don't have any faith in him, but the American public, I believe, has lost faith also in the FBI. That's kind of an important issue.
I agree.
Well, I agree, but I'm not convinced, and there's no evidence of that because the FBI is very cloistered of whether or not he's lost the support of the rank and file of the FBI. I think it's interesting that he was addressing an FBI, a gathering of FBI agents in L.A., and this White House didn't have the guts to tell him privately that he was fired, that he learned from screens in the back of the room from that were streaming CNN and the breaking news and Comey's fired, and he thought they were pulling a joke on him.
Have you ever been in a difficult situation like that? Sometimes managerial decisions are made based on evidence, preponderous amounts of evidence, that indicates you take action now. Trump, if he's nothing else, granted he's kind of vulgar at times, he's got a lot of flaws, but he's decisive. He sees something that needs corrected. I'll grant you, he's going to jump in and correct it and go on to the next phase in the process.
Yeah, but Joe, I'm going to jump in again and say that, you know, this is something that apparently had been in the works for about a week. The fact that Comey had not been contacted and informed of his dismissal is reprehensible in my mind. But that's secondary. It's unimportant, frankly, and we'll forget in the next 10 minutes.
That's called business. The way it happens.
This is a national
both national security, and it's also it goes to what the American public, whether or not we have faith in our government.
And the thing is, Joe, if you ran a business and you're an associate manager of, you know, a store in Winnetka, and you got to fire him, A, you'd have someone in place to take that person's place. There was no thought given to that. We're going to begin tomorrow the search for a replacement. There was no thought to this. If it's impetuousness, honest to goodness, Joe, you wouldn't want someone running your business, you wouldn't want someone running your government to have that level of impetuousness, I don't think.
Scott, I worked for a small company by the name of General Electric for 35 years. Oh. I had, at one point in time, 575 people under me. I had to fire, promote, and do various things and sundry things for my personnel, okay?
Sure.
Did I savor them all? Hell no. I can say hell on the radio.
Yes, you can. It's after 11.
Did I enjoy everything? No. Did I do what was expedient to please Jack Welch, who was a mastermind of, hey, if you don't do your job, I'm coming in next quarter. I'm going to cut 25% of your personnel. Mm-hmm. I'm coming back in another 3 months. If you haven't been boosted to number two or number one in your industry, you better look at your own tail, buddy.
Yeah.
So this is the decisive action that I thoroughly appreciate in Trump. Right?
Joe, in Rosenstein's own words, Joe, I believe it's critical for the American people to have confidence in the integrity of our investigations. And I believe today he completely undermined that. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Broadcasting live from our Allstate Showcase Studio South, I am in Springfield in the basement of our state's capital. In studio on Michigan Avenue is Scott Santis in the Allstate Showcase Studio. He is the political cartoonist and editorial board member for the Chicago Tribune. And we want to thank Peter from Vin Chicago for providing the libations that Scott gets to enjoy while I'm
yes, always a pleasure.
Down in the basement. And we've been having our conversation about the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Esmeralda, I know that you might have some thoughts. Are you at all? Where'd your mind go when you heard about the firing of James Comey?
I just thought it was insane, and I always find it insane when this happens, when no one tells the person that's being fired that they're fired.
Right. But it's business, Esmeralda.
You have to find out through the news, the TV. It's like, seriously?
Yeah, here's the thing. When you fire somebody at a company, they're not going to find out about it on CNN.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Find that insane, especially at that high level. They can't pull someone aside and let them know.
Right. That's. I mean, the technology of the White House, they can't even Skype. I think that would be a Skyping moment. Hey, James, how's it going in California? Just want to tell you things have changed.
Yeah, you know that flight back to D.C.?
Yeah. You're flying coach, my friend, on Spirit Airlines. Hope you get both sides of the seatbelt. Yikes.
Yeah, this is like I mentioned earlier, this is a tipping point. This is an important point in history. And we'll be looking back and point at this, our kids and our grandkids, and they're going to be asking, what the hell did you do to respond to this?
Well, I think that, look, if they appoint a special prosecutor, if there is there must be confirmation hearings when you decide, there have to be for an FBI director.
Oh, and by the way, they just announced today that there are indictments coming down. A grand jury has handed down indictments over the investigation in the connection of the, say it with me, kids, the Trump campaign in Russia.
There are indictments?
There are.
Wait, what?
Yes. I don't have the specifics in front of me, but look it up. Okay, you have the interwebs there. You are better equipped in the basement of the of the capital of Springfield than I am here high above in the Tribune Tower.
Wait a minute. So my everything is my entire feed is filled with the information about Comey, but I haven't seen that much about indictments.
Yeah, well, yes, no, look it up. They came down, I want to say, this afternoon.
Okay.
And maybe that was the timing. I don't, you know, with this crew, who the heck knows? But we are, you know, and as you mentioned in the earlier segment, a reporter, you said, a producer, mm-hmm. a television producer was arrested in West Virginia because he had the temerity to ask a question.
Right.
When he was told not to ask, there are no questions. Free speech is for those who are recognized.
These are strange times. And we haven't even talked about Stephen Colbert being investigated by the FCC.
That is, I mean, why? He said bad words. I thought his choice of words was juvenile. We all have those moments.
Here's my question about the joke. Yes, okay, as tawdry as people may think, here's the thing. Can they prove that President Trump is not, in fact, that? I'm just saying. I mean, like, it seems like the impetus is on the president to say, I'm so not that, and have to prove that.
How can we say this clinically? Because the phrase was...
Nope. If people don't know, that's not... That's,
really?
I'm just
saying. I can say
they can Google. They can Google the joke. They can Google it.
All right. I'm just saying.
I think that the impetus... I think that the
Can
the
you
burden,
prove and conclusively
that he is not
the president
that.
Is if, not?
Yes. I think that that's really... Yes.
That thing.
The burden of proof is on the president. Prove to us that you are not
true.
That.
That's true. You're going to charge him. If you're going to investigate him, mm-hmm. you're going to have to. Yeah.
Is it
say that you're not?
Yes.
That thing.
Thing. Right, Esmeralda. Where am I wrong on this? I think that if they're going to invest, if the FCC is going to investigate, they have to go. He is not that. Really, prove it.
Yeah. What is the burden of proof or something?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where
you really want to say it. You want to say it so bad, Scott, it hurts.
I can say something close to it.
Nope.
No, okay.
No.
All right, then. All right, then. It's your show. I do what I'm told.
It's all right, then.
I'm enjoying some lovely champagne here, though, from Vin.
Have you ever been, is there ever been something where people threaten you for content?
Oh, good Lord. You know, I just, the funniest threat I ever had in my entire career, and bear in mind, I've been doing this for well over 35 years, is a guy called up and says, well, if Stannis doesn't back off, we're going to investigate him. I thought, okay. Oh, that poor slob who has to,
you know, because
it really would be Stannis woke up this morning with own wife, drove to work, drove home from work, went home to own wife and children, worked until midnight, went to bed with own wife, next day. You know, that would be it. I'm the dullest man on the planet.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So have you been threatened?
As far like in stand-up comedy, there's never been. I mean, I know that there are other comics who have gotten in trouble, have gotten comedy clubs sued actually for language that was considered to be racist. Yeah, but yeah, there have been several comedy clubs that I know that have because patrons have felt uncomfortable with the language of the comedian, and there, that's happened in the United States and in Canada, I think.
Well, Canada, you know.
I know. It's just, I'm just saying.
Get out. What can I tell you? They're polite people.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're playing hockey.
I know. We're not. Don't remind me.
I don't.
It's so weird. On my calendar, I had all the schedule for the Blackhawks game. So every once in a while, if we made it into the playoffs, like what nights we might be starting late. Yeah, it's not. It's all right. Next year, we're gonna restructure.
Sure, let's go with that.
One more. In fact,
the caption contest this week is. Mm-hmm. How terrible is this? I don't know their names, but the mascots for the Bulls and for the Blackhawks.
For the Blackhawks is Tommy Hawk and Benny the Bull for the Chicago Bulls.
And they're sitting in the stands at Wrigley Field.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And they're saying, God, I feel, so far it's one of the better ones. It's like, shouldn't we be at work?
or there are worse ways to spend our nights.
No, that wasn't one of the finalists. But you can go to ScottStannis.com. ChicagoTribune.com/Stannis, and you can vote.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Go home and get some rest. I know this was a last minute thing. You know,
and I'm sorry to rant. I'm sorry to.
What? That's why we called, and a little Vin Chicago helps. Thank you so much, Peter, for helping Scott Stantis on this evening.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been a pleasure listening to you guys.
And Peter, we didn't get this earlier. Your lovely wine shop on Elston Avenue. One more time. What's the address and website?
Sure. It's 1826 North Elston Avenue, and the website is vinchicago.com. So vinchicago.com.
Excellent. Stop in and tell them that you heard it on WGN Radio. They'll help you out with the perfect wine. More after this on 720 WGN. Good night, Scott.
Good night.
Love you.
Thank you. Love you, too. Bye.
We'll be back after this in the news. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in our Allstate Showcase Studios South. I am in Springfield in the basement of our state capitol. I'm in the basement because this is the only place I can find to broadcast and get a clear line, a clear connection with our station back home in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Producer Michael Heidemann is behind the glass and taking your phone calls, running the show. We also have Adam Burke, who is our engineer tonight. We also have Esmeralda Leon. And I want to talk a little bit in a few minutes about allergy season. I think that this is a really awful allergy season, and I'm trying to I'm not losing my mind. I'm pretty sure this is worse than ever. We were talking before the break. We've been talking about the firing of FBI Director James Comey. On the line with us, we have a listener who wanted to join the conversation. How are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Gary, is it?
Yes, it is.
Hello. Oh, Adam Phillips. I'm sorry. Adam Burke is a comedian, and the engineer is Adam Phillips. I don't know. I think I just saw a post. I apologize, Adam. I know your name. Sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead, Gary. Yes.
I want to say, first of all, thank you for the interview that you had and the conversation you had with Madigan.
Oh, thank you.
That was great.
Thank you.
You did a great job there.
I was nervous. Believe me, I know that it's a rare opportunity. So I was I had all my questions ready to go, and I would love to have another opportunity to do it again. So thank you. Appreciate that.
I hope so. And but my question now actually is more like I was born in '52, and. I remember the Nixon and how he obfuscated and tried to delay and delay and delay and what happened to him. How do you feel about, I'll let you go on this, because I know you want to get on to other things.
No, it's okay.
Go ahead. I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about having a special prosecutor appointed to look into all of this?
Yeah, I think that that's imperative. I think that that would go a long way to restore some public trust. I think that as a special prosecutor, I don't know why anyone would disagree with that. Do you?
Why don't they? How does that come about? How can we implement this whole situation to figure out what's going on?
I think public pressure, and I think that there have to be Republicans on the same page. I think that that's the only way it gets done, if we have our legislators in D.C. on the same page, putting forward, recommending a special prosecutor and appointing one. Because I don't think the White House is going to do it. I think that I don't know if they can pressure him. I'm not sure the procedures, but we'll keep talking about it, Gary. You have a good night, okay?
You have a very nice evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Esmeralda, do you get allergies?
I do, and it wasn't so bad this season. I've been okay, but I just started with what I think are allergies. Like, I don't know what they are.
Well, and I didn't do it. Like, I know that that Nick DiGilio has a doctor on who talks about ways to prepare yourself. And, like, I think one of the things you're supposed to do is have the honey from your area, like buy local honey so that you have some of the pollinated, right?
Yeah, I've been told that neti pot, doing sinus rinses, that's supposed to really help. But yeah, I think it's probably easier if you know exactly what causes your allergy.
I know.
Because people, I go and they're just like, it's allergies. I'm like, of what? And they don't know.
Well, then there are ways to find out. I know, like, there are skin tests. Have you ever done that? I've never.
No, I haven't.
No, I just get a scratchy throat and runny nose and my eyes burn. I get, and I get tired too. Maybe that's just that I'm not getting
my
enough
sinuses
sleep.
Just go haywire.
Yeah.
Like I have a cold. That's essentially, that's all that happens. And it'll last for like a week and then goes away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you take Claritin? Do you take any, like, antihistamines?
No,
or?
If it's really bad, I'll take some over-the-counter, whatever, nose spray. Allergy that nose spray.
Open things up.
And do the neti pot, but I try not to because I don't really like taking too many pills.
Yeah, I agree. I hear you there. And plus, sometimes I think I'm just taking it because I think it helps, and I'm not even sure if I'm...
Right, exactly.
The trick is, you're right, is to get diagnosed, is to make sure you actually have allergies I think I have allergies. I'm just going to take stuff. I don't know. Michael, do you have allergies?
Yes, I do, in fact. And every day I wish I didn't.
Are you having a tougher time this season?
You know, to be honest, I've had some really big issues over the past few years, especially when it becomes spring and everything starts blooming. But it's been so cold that nothing has bloomed here, so I haven't had it too bad. Maybe some dry skin here and there, but I'm all about the Claritin. I do that almost every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think because it was really warm in January. We had a bunch of warm days, and I feel like it triggered something, and then, like you said, it got cold and it froze over again. Mm-hmm. But it is a strange season. I was just wondering if I was the only one. I'm feeling like maybe. And by the way, it is really, it was blazing hot in Springfield today.
You're lucky.
No, it was so hot. It was like I did my hair and it got all frizzy because it was muggy and sweaty. I'm sorry. I'm whining. I apologize. It was hot and sunny in Springfield today. It was very weird because I got on the train in Chicago at Union Station. It was in the 40s yesterday, and I got off the train in Springfield. It was 70.
Ooh.
But today it was in the 80s. It was hot. And I was dressed like it was Chicago. I had a dress with tights and my boots and a leather jacket. It was very, my body is so confused this season. I don't know how to acclimate anywhere. We are going to take a break here. When we come back, tell me something good. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. What are you celebrating? What are you excited about? Let us know. 312-981-7200. More after this on 720 WGN.
Tell me something good. Tell me that you love me.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studios South, broadcasting from our studio in the basement of the state capitol. And we have, by the way, my something good is Adam Phillips is our engineer tonight. Adam Burke is an excellent comedian, but he is not our engineer. And thank you so much, Adam Phillips. Adam Phillips, thank you so much, Adam Phillips. Joining us on the line to tell us something good is Margaret. How are you doing, Margaret?
Well, hi, Patty. I just wanted to thank you so much for your interview with Mike Madigan. I was in and out of the car, so I caught bits and pieces, and I was rushing to get back into the car so I could hear it. But what I did hear, you did an excellent job, and I just want to let you know that there are many of us out here that do appreciate when you put in, you know, quality work like that and the effort and bring information to us that we're all concerned about.
Oh, thank you, Margaret.
You know, it affects our lives, and too often, you know, we see these ads on the TV or hear, you know, from other people who are just giving one side. And I think, you know, we need to hear from Mike Madigan more, because he's the one who, you know, is in a position that he can affect, you know, he's in a position, I guess, that he, you know, he's the chairman. I mean, he's the
yeah.
guy who has the ability and authority to get groups together, to get them to work, and to hear his thoughts and his positions on why, you know, what he wants to do and why he needs to do it. And to me, it shouldn't matter if a person's Republican or Democrat. You just have to care about people and the suffering that's going on and how to help people in general. So I just want to thank you so much.
Margaret, and that's why we keep having the conversation is that, I had asked several legislators to put in the good word for WGN Radio. That's our sense is that, you know, we hear from so many different people, but we had not heard. A lot of people don't even know what Speaker Madigan's voice sounded like, and. You know, he has been there for a long time, and we need to remind the people that are in public service that we are their constituents, and in particular the Speaker of the House, who represents the entire state, because he does have so much power, and it is important to hear that story, where he comes from, what his values are. So, Margaret, thank you so much for that. Where do you live, Margaret? Of course. Where do you live?
Oh, don't. I'm just outside of the city. I don't need.
That's okay. No. I just wanted to know what area you're from, and I think
Skokie
that
area. Skokie.
Okay. Are you in? Do you know if you're in Leader Lou Lang's district?
Oh yes.
Yes.
We go to meetings when he and our state representative, Senator Ira Silverstein, has meetings. You know, we do attend, and people are very vocal. And, you know, they expressed the same concerns that Mike Madigan was bringing up. And, you know, because, again, this isn't a Republican issue. This isn't a Democratic issue. This is a humanity issue, a human issue.
Thank you. And I can tell you that Leader Lou Lang also was very helpful in making sure that we were able to get an interview with Speaker Madigan.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. I'll have to call him and thank him for that. Okay, Patty,
absolutely.
You have a good evening.
Thank you for that, Margaret. You too. Well, have a good night. Thank you so much. I'm glad that you called in. Thank you. So Margaret's my son. Margaret's my other something good. Thank you so much. That was I'm glad to hear. I know that there are people who, you know, there is only so much I can do in a one-on-one conversation. And I want to continue to have the conversation. I do want to learn more about the Speaker of the House. I think there is so much mystery and mythology around him. I think the more and that is true of all of our legislators. You can go into their office. You can call them. The Speaker, a little bit harder to schedule time with him, but your legislators are there for you, and they should be listening to you. I think one of the reasons that Speaker Madigan does get reelected is that his community, he's beloved in his neighborhood and has been reelected repeatedly since 1971. And your legislators are there for you. Call them, email them, show up, go to town hall meetings. You know, we haven't talked about the field trip to Springfield because we weren't able to make it an official WGN Radio trip. But I'll be coming down here for the next several weeks. So if people want to reach out and if you want to meet in the Capitol, you know, you can jump on Amtrak. If you can drive down, whatever way you can get down to Springfield, and let me know when you're coming. In particular, they are going to be in session every week through May 31st. And we can figure out a way to, if a group of people come down, if you want to meet in the rotunda, I can show you, take you up to the gallery to watch the House of Representatives, to watch the, the senators debate in their chamber. I can introduce you, hopefully, to your legislator from your district so you can meet them face to face. Come down and watch how things are done, how your issues are discussed, how your lives are sometimes it's weird to hear the things that are really important to you and the tone that legislators can have if they're against it, the passion with which the legislators who are supportive of what you find important. It is, I think it is really a valuable experience. So if you want to email me, I'm at pattihappens@gmail.com. That's pattihappens@gmail.com. So let me know. And I know there's some people that I have to reach out to that had already emailed me before. It's just a kind of, I can at least show you around the state capitol. All right. Michael, are we out of time? I think that it just, unless, Esmeralda, before we go, do you have something good?
I'm almost finished unpacking.
That's right. How is it going in your new apartment?
Oh, it's lovely. They just fixed almost everything that they needed to fix.
Well,
there was
a couple things,
but they fixed
it. Is it electrical? Is it,
one electrical, just imperfection things that they should not have not been there. But it's all good.
Okay.
It's all good now.
I'm not sure if I should.
Just things like, they rammed into stuff and they left it.
Oh, that's not good.
Like a big old thing on the wall and that kind of stuff.
Ew.
Paint,
ew.
That's stripped and things like that.
Some cosmetic stuff that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's all
enough.
Good. So that's
congratulations,
my something good.
Then. I can't wait to see your place.
Yeah. I'm excited.
You have to make me a waffle.
Yes.
I'm going to do it.
Indeed.
Thanks, Esmeralda. We are done. I've got to, I'm in the basement of the Capitol and I've got to get going because I'm not sure when they turn the lights off in this place, but it's time now for Nick D's show.